Well, welcome back. I think it's going to take two more weeks, today and one more time. I got into it and I thought, gosh, there's no way I can do this in 1 week. And I'm going to, you know, there's two dangers. One, that I rush through it. I don't want to rush through it. But also I'll try to keep up a pace so that we can get through it in 2 weeks. And I passed out, I sent you guys this outline, which I'm going to try to follow. The issue is, how can we not miss the forest for the trees? And so I tried to get the absolute maximum main themes, and I'm going to boil it down to two main images. One we've already worked through, Izdubar, or Gilgamesh. The next is going to be Fanis, I think it's pronounced. That's coming up. What is this book about? I stopped and asked myself. Well, I would say basically it's about the birth of the self from opposites. It started off as a quick review now. He shoots Siegfried. So the Western power drive in general and in him has to be reevaluated. As soon as he does that, up comes Salome and Elijah. They're the two. They're an example of the two opposites. Salome would represent eroticism, and Elijah would represent wisdom. And that's what he struggles with throughout the whole time. On one hand, you can see those opposites about his own sex life. On the other hand, I think it's a mistake to say this book is about his sex life, which is what a recent book that came out says. I would say it's about the interplay of opposites. Sexuality and spirituality is where those opposites hit him. But the more general recognition he comes to is, when you carry your conflict, something inside resolves. On a deeper level, too, those opposites which appeared in his life, you know, the conflict between his conscience and his marriage triangle, I think does show a more general appearance of the opposites of spirit and matter. So you could start on the personal level, the opposites are about his own personal life. On a broader scale, those opposites are spirit and matter, and that's for him true, but it's also true for us. It's the error of Christianity. We'll be talking about that. And then the opposites in general, no matter what they are, is, I think, the greater meaning of this back and forth. So when he deals with the opposites, then this is the first image of resolution, which, and that's where we finished last week. Why do I say that? Because Gilgamesh, it's another name for Izdubar, started out a tyrant, and he became human through loss. That is unique, as far as I know, in any hero myth in Western civilization. It shows the birth of the self, because what the self is getting your arrogance under control and finding how to live a human and meaningful life. That's what he's struggling to achieve in himself, and then what he achieves in himself is kind of a recipe for us.
So you call it the birth of the self?
Yeah, I would call this is the real first clear self image. Now, it's got a lot of problems with it, which you talked about a little bit last time. It's a solar image. Well, what about the moon? So the subsequent phase now is going to be the development of that self-image from now till the end of the book. And when it gets established in the appearance of Fanis, then we start hearing images right away of which dictate to him what became Jungian psychology. So you've got Izdubar or Gilgamesh first, problematic. It will continue to develop through another series of conflicts with the opposites. It will then solidify again in Fanis, There's still some problems with Farnese, but far fewer problems than with Gilgamesh. And then the figures that follow Farnese will start to dictate what we now call Jungian psychology. So that's the absolute major overview. And we saw last time the two opposites, as I said, Elijah and Salome, the old scholar and his sexy daughter, and the red one on the one hand and the anchorite on the other. And then we had Izdebar appear. This, for Jung, is the shift from 2 to 3. And what makes it happen, we don't know.
Which is the shift from 2 to 3?
The birth of Izdebar out of the conflict between Salome and Elijah, and out of the conflict between the old scholar and his daughter, and out of the conflict between the red one and the anchorite.
Did you also see that this is the spirit of the depths and the spirit of the times?
Yes. Yeah, that's a good point, Jane. The context for all this, too, which I probably should have mentioned, is the war, World War One, and he sees the world around him in this euphoric confidence in progress and pleasure. Really, people were really enjoying life, and then all of a sudden, all hell breaks loose. So, the shooting of Siegfried would be the first attempt to understand where did we go wrong. And where we went wrong is the power drive of the Western ego. It's about dominance. That's the way we're built, or the way we have been built anyway. And that's got to change, or we'll keep. One party will try to dominate another, and there'll be another war. I mean, it's still going on now. Then what he realizes is there's another understanding beneath that, and that's what we're talking about. That's this process that's trying to reformulate, well, first to show what's going on, the Siegfried power drive, and then to reformulate what will, if we are not oriented by power, what will replace that. And what will replace that is symbolized in these images of Gilgamesh, Farnese, we'll see later, Atmavictu, Telesphorus, and so on. I'm getting ahead of the game a little bit there, but that's where we are. So today we'll pick up with Izdebar. Are you happy with the overall picture?
It's understandable why I went to Job, the story of Job, because that was the guy
to make overcome. Yeah. And of course what he overcomes is the violence of Job. Sorry, the violence of Yahweh. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, you don't know this until you start mucking around in dreams, but it's astounding how often people who have been abused dream it was God who did it to them. It doesn't make logical sense. But that's what appears in dreams, and more specifically, the destructive side of God. When we start with Job, I'll start off with a dream like that, of a guy who was abused. And what he dreams is it's the dark side of God who abused him. So that if you put that on a psychological level, that unrecognized violence in our belief system is what is actually carrying the day. It's not our words. We talk love, but we live violence and power. And that's what the dark side of the God image would symbolize. Okay, well, 278. We met Izdebar. This is the first left-hand side. He's carrying a double axe, and he smashes it. And he compares himself to Jung, who says, I come from the land of science and technology. § 278, the second side, Izdebar says, science is poison. And that science has lamed him. And then Jung says, our truth comes from the knowledge of outer things, and your truth comes from the knowledge of inner things. Isdabar says he draws his force from nature, and that science has taken away his capacity. Jung says science has taken away the capacity of belief. And Isdabar says to Jung, how do you live? This is on 279, the second column. And Jung says, I have one foot in the cold and one foot in the hot. See the two opposites. And Jung says, I've set out for the east, for the land, for the east, the land of the rising sun. And then Jung says to Isdabar, the outer opposition is an imagery of inner opposition, and this is what you can unite in yourself. So we've got the opposites. We've got Isdabar saying he doesn't like science. We've got Jung recognizing that when the main value system collapses, what happens is we have to face the conflict in ourselves. That's basically what's going on. Then Jung says, 280, first column, I was a child and grew like a greening tree and let the wind and distant cries of commotion as opposites blow through me. And I just brought this along to remind you how in alchemy the tree is depicted as uniting opposites. There you can see the two. That's not quite bright enough. There, it's even more clear. You got the sun and the moon on the two branches of the tree. So, all this is just different versions of what we said. Opposites appear when the main value dies. You have to wrestle with them, and what that does is initiate a growth which unites them. And we'll see by the end, there is no longer a split between Elijah and Salome. There is no longer a split between spirit and matter. But he had to go through that relationship, that marriage triangle, to get there. On 281, second column. Jung says, I was in the dark and fed myself with poison. So he's realizing that the linear scientific mind isn't adequate for understanding the dilemma that he's up against. And then Isdabar, he says of Isdabar, and he draws his bow against ever more distant goals until he comes aware of the sun wandering high up in the sky and wants to catch it. His essence is blind, excessive longing and tempestuous force. His possession is abundance. What I lack, I want to make his force my own. See, that's a problem. That the orientation is still toward the sun. It's still toward wanting to control that energy that's coming to him.
See, who's talking here when my essence? Is that Isdabar?
I just tried to pick out main quotes. Which one are you referring to, Carol?
You just read.
Oh, his essence. His essence is referring to, Jung referring to Isdabar.
Okay.
So you see how complicated this image of Isdabar is. He is desire, and he is the ability to shoot for the long-term goal. On the other hand, he's power. So the problem of Siegfried is still hovering around Gilgamesh, even though it's far in advance of where it was prior to the shooting of
but
Siegfried.
It's still invested in power.
It still has, it's like he doesn't really understand what he's saying until we get to the end. And so the Izdabar was the first manifestation of the self, but it's got these problematic aspects to it. And what the subsequent images will do is work on that problem until we get a pure image of the self, which is the ability to give and create without this egotism.
And that's the orientation towards the sun.
I would say the orientation towards the sun is power.
Okay.
And we'll see at the end, the sun comes back. It's one of the last images. But then so does the worm. Here we don't have the worm. The worm is low. Sun is high.
And I think the other important image was that of the plants that encircled some of the first images that showed that they were both poison and...
Yeah. But that's the way it works. There's a healing image which solves a previous issue, and yet there's problematic aspects to it. And the next cycle is dealing with the problematic aspects of what was just born.
I wondered too about Izdabar being a solar image, and wondering if when a new god image shows up in the collective or within the individual, if it isn't going to be solar because it's coming to consciousness, you're bringing something that's been pushed down, that power drive, now out into the light.
Could be, yeah.
That needs to be looked at.
And there's always a compulsive aspect to its first appearance, mm-hmm. and that could be solar, yeah. Though I think what we got to come to is the sun and the moon in balance.
Right.
And we don't get to that for quite a while.
Right, but if you can't see it, you can't work on that.
Right. Well, that's the first chapter of the first day. We come to the second day. Izdabar admits he's a fantasy. And Jung says, a fantasy takes up no space. I squeeze Izdabar into the size of an egg and put him in my pocket. He was saved by declaring himself a figment of the imagination. He did not pass away, but became a living fantasy. That's putting it half empty. Another way to say that is Jung is realizing these figures are aspects within his own psyche. And that Izdabar is an inner capacity of his to which he has to develop a responsible relationship. That allows him then to realize that these religious images, this will come later, are portraits of psychic potentiality. Then we go to the incantations. I'll just read you a couple of them. Here's the first picture.
Where are we in the text?
284, second column. I know I'm zipping along, but otherwise we'll be here another 4 years. I'll read certain segments of it. Light of the middle way. See, we've got now that recognition that there is a middle way between the opposites. So that's what Izdabar was. He was the first appearance of the middle way. Enclosed in the egg, embryonic, full of ardor, oppressed, as heavy as stone, hardened, molten, transparent, streaming bright, coiled on itself. And you can see how there is a birth of something moving up. That would be another image of the self coming up out of that polarity.
Is that 53?
Yeah. Now there's a whole lot we could say, but I'm just touching on them. On the main idea. Then, on 284, the second column. Amen, you are the Lord of the beginning. I skip. Amen, you are the flower that blooms over everything. Again, that all that energy that's shooting out of that snake's mouth is the energy of the middle way that's coming to him. Because it's fire. This picture is also associated with that incantation. And the footnote is to the line, a road without end. Now, if you remember, that is a reference to the Egyptian myth of the sun descending. That's the sun in the middle there. And when the sun is in the underworld, its head becomes a scarab beetle. So that Jung is playing out that image in his picture, showing that the loss of values, of a value system, namely the one based on the patriarchal god, the loss of a value system is being regenerated in this dark night of the soul he's going through.
Is that image 58?
That's 55.
You said that shows the dark night of the soul?
Yeah, because the sun now, in the Egyptian mind, when it sets, goes under the world on the ocean. And that's night. And when the sun is in its night form, it's a scarab. Because the scarab, remember, rolled its eggs in cow dung. And so they would watch these beetles being born out of manure, and that's how it got its association of birth through darkness, its association with rebirth through darkness. Two 285, first column, what else do you want? What else shall we fulfill for you? We open every door for you. We wanted to turn right, but go left, obedient to your sign. And then this is the picture from that, number 59. And that business of turning left and right, sort of classic for dream work. If you're going left, it often has to do with really beginning to take the unconscious seriously, going right more into the outer world.
It's interesting. I was just watching a program on TV that morning. They were talking about the psychology that retailers use on you when you come to the store, is they set everything up to direct you to go right.
Huh.
And the commentator was saying, what you really need to do is go left.
Hmm. That's very interesting. Yeah. Well, here he's going left, meaning into himself to help this new attitude develop and be born. And then this is another picture associated with it. So we got that egg image. Remember, Izdubar is in the egg. So Izdubar now is being subjected to another rebirth process because of that solar issue we just talked about. To 85, the second column, he continues and he says that he still has not accepted what chokes his heart. So I think that's an indication he's struggling to come to grips with this process. And then he says on the same page, but I have caught him, he who has been feared since time immemorial. I have made him small and my hand surrounds him. That is the demise of the gods. Man puts them in his pocket. That is the end of the story of the gods.
It's 286.
Should be 285, second column. I just marked down what. It's one of the incantations. Yeah. Well, again, that is an important truth, and it's also problematic because nobody can contain the God. So he's still wrestling with, okay, I don't project onto the outer God anymore. I have found this process in myself. How do I establish a relationship to it? His first reaction is, I can control it. See, that's the solar aspect of Gilgamesh, that consciousness can manipulate these things. What he'll increasingly realize is, no, I have to serve it. But at this point, he's thinking he can control the process. But on the other hand, he is putting Gilgamesh through a process of transformation, and we'll see a much deeper image of the self appear shortly. But on the positive side, it's his realizing I can no longer project on a traditional God. I've got to find something in myself.
The other thing that hits me here is that Jung believed that we had to find what needed to be carried forward from the old God image.
Yeah.
And so, in a way, that's incubating in this egg as well.
That is. And that will really become, we probably won't get to it today, but that will be something we'll look at. How he cannot throw out Christianity. Mm-hmm. But he also can't accept it in the condition that it is. Now we start to hear a slightly different attitude. 286, the first column. My God, I love you as a mother loves the unborn whom she carries in her heart. Grow in the egg of the East. Nourish yourself from my love so that you will become a radiant God. We do not need your power. See how that's changing? But life. What does power avail us? We do not want to rule. We want to live. And then we have that image associated with that passage. And there you can see how the tree is beginning to grow between the opposites. And then we have that image where the fire is being worshipped, not, we don't see that he's trying to carry it in his pocket. And I often think the pictures are kind of ahead of his own text. This is where we're going.
What image number is the tree?
63 is the tree, and 64 is the, I think it's that, Agnihotri. Agnihotra, number 64. There's reference to Hindu symbolism. I've just had to cut some of this stuff out. We could spend another hour on that picture, but just touching them. How the shift to the self is changing. See, he's worshiping now. He's no longer putting anything in his pocket. How do you put that fire in your pocket? That's what's coming to him. And then we have the opening of the egg. Isdemar emerges reborn. The editor cites a quote from volume 6. This is in footnote 137 in the text, if you're interested. The renewed God, this is Jung commenting on the renewal of attitude. The renewed God signifies a renewed attitude, that is, a renewed possibility for intensive life, because psychologically, God always denotes the greatest value. Thus, the greatest sum of the libido, the greatest intensity of life, the optimum of psychological activity.
That was 136?
Sorry, that's 286. And footnote 137. Well, we're still having to separate wheat and chaff here. What is true is his seeing God as what is most important to you. However, simply saying God is libido is back in solar thinking. Intensity. Greatest potential. Because God is also the opposite of those. But he hasn't gotten there yet. And you can kind of watch how his grasp of his own material evolves through the book. 287. He says, I wanted to rise too, this is 287 in the first column, as if I were the sun. Well, we're back to that again. Woe betide the mother who gives birth to a god. The god suffers when man does not accept his darkness. He will develop that idea later into the state of the unconscious is a reflection of the state of consciousness. If you don't take your inner self seriously, it suffers. The god suffers because you continue to suffer from loving evil. You will need evil to dissolve your formation and to free yourself from the power of what has been. Now we get into some deep stuff. In the outline, I marked that evil plus and minus. We've gone through the positive and negative aspects of the sun, and then he starts looking at the positive and negative aspects of evil. On the one hand, we have to have in us a demonic strength to attack and destroy the parts of ourselves that are inadequate. To, if you want to take it in a personalistic terms, to hate those influences in your early years that tried to destroy you. You might say you have to be able to hate the hater and to overcome what has tried to destroy you with an equally dark resolve. That's what he's talking about. On the other hand, you've got to be so careful you don't fall blindly into that attitude. It's a very dangerous moment. When people really get in touch with their rage and resentment, will they turn it against what it needs to be turned against, or will they turn it against themselves and other people around them? So that's what he's that's what he's realizing here. See, he, you know, that shooting of Siegfried implied evil. He murdered him. So you have to be able to kill this stuff that's messing with your life. But you also have to be careful that it doesn't take that attitude of resentment doesn't overwhelm you. So you will need evil to dissolve your formation. Your formation would be your previous attitude. And to free yourself from the power of what has been. But if you don't do it the right way, your inner potential will suffer, which is what he means by the God suffers, because you continue to suffer from loving evil. And then there's that little quote, which doesn't play much of a role in here, but it does in his work, how goodness can be destructive. 288, the first column. As a resolution, he comes up with this point. But the right way, this is 288, the first column, is that we accept emptiness, destroy the image of the form within us, meaning the old image of the old. Negate the God, negate the previous understanding of divinity, and descend into the abyss and awfulness of matter. The God as our work stands outside us and no longer needs our help. So the way to deal with these old attitudes that are destructive, whether they're personal attitudes or cultural attitudes, is to consciously negate them, but in the dark night of the soul, when you know the difference between doing it arrogantly and doing it to save yourself. And now he's given another definition of God, which is essentially God is our work. He'll say later, God is our opus. See, he's redefining what God is. God isn't a loving father or a moral giving father. God is what we do with our lives.
So God becomes a verb instead of a noun, right?
Yes, you could. Yeah, that's good. But God becomes a verb instead of a noun. We each have a task. We each are addressed by a question, and fulfilling that is what is sacred. That would be how he'd probably put it later. See, that's again a great difference from putting the God in your pocket. But you hear all these different angles on the thing, particularly at this point. And then we get some more pictures. See how things are opening up. We talked about this very briefly, just to remind you. I think it's probably where he got his idea later on that the relationship between spirit and matter, I'll read you, this is from paragraph 418 in Collected Works 10, is like two cones whose apices meeting in a point without extension, a real zero point, touch and do not touch. Both cones have a center in them, and then they meet in the middle, which is a meeting point of infinitely small dimensions. I mean, it's completely nonlinear thinking, but I believe this is the picture he would have let guide his thinking, how spirit and matter can connect. The meaning of desirousness and say synchronicity. Synchronicity would be an example of matter operating meaningfully. Matter operating like a dream.
Where are we in our text?
We are 288, and this is picture 72. 288, the first side, and this is picture 72. Is this digestible, or am I going too fast?
Going a little fast.
I think about this image, what's interesting is where the cones meet is where their colors, I know we can't see it as well with the lights on, but it's where their colors are very similar.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So in the center, the red meets the red, and then the other. And yet that gradation of color, that lightest color there, is also shown in the very center of the circles, the outer circles. So, like, can you see that? How it comes through, the color comes through.
Yeah. You can express in a picture what logically would be gobbledygook.
Mm-hmm. But it has an emotional response in me.
Mm-hmm.
So how would you sum up this, what this picture means, Gary?
Well, I took it as a foreshadowing of his expressing in a metaphor how the spirit and matter connect. And that those the meaning points are what those two cones are what he refers to as a zero point, where they touch and don't touch.
And yet there's an energy exchange.
And yet there's an exchange.
Like a synapse.
Yeah.
You know.
See, he's trying to express it in a way that's not causal.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, how is it that dreams can appear in matter? That's an ongoing problem. How is it that erotic desire can convey psychological meaning? How can the body and physical desire express the truths of the psyche? And I think the other one is often how can diseases express the truth of the body?
I have a little side note. I think you said where matter collides with God.
Where matter collides with God. Yeah, I agree with me. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you see, if you think about what we've just done, we've had Izdebar, we've had the two sides of the sun, and now we have the two sides of evil. And pretty soon we're going to start seeing images that resolve that. This is how this book is structured. And 289, the first column, he writes, I saw that my soul had fallen into the power of abysmal evil. Oops. That talk about using evil to destroy your formation can also lead to a very destructive consciousness, or condition rather, if your resentment makes you bitter. That would be the soul falling into evil. Uh, 289, first column. My God rose in the eastern sky, brighter than the heavenly host. That would be Izdebar's rebirth. I also wanted evil for the sake of my God. And then 289, the second column. When my soul fell into the hands of evil, it was defenseless except for the weak fishing rod which it could use to pull the fish from the sea of emptiness. Does that make sense? The danger of getting consumed by the resentment of the old that needs to change, and yet you need to do that, but you can't let that consume you. A perfect example of that would be Moby Dick. He is so consumed with rage against the whale that the whole thing kills him. Then the next chapter is the sacrificial murder. 290, first column. A marionette with a broken head lies before me, and then the body of a small girl covered with terrible wounds, smeared with blood. Then he realizes that what his soul tells him, the soul of the child tells him that he has to eat the child's liver. And when he does, after great consternation, 290, the second column, she throws her veil back, a beautiful maiden with ginger hair. She says, I am your soul. That's a very strange image. But I think that the marionette would be what it does to us to give up our hopes and dreams and simply be defined by collective expectations.
Or when the soul is controlled by dogma. It is a marionette.
Yeah. Yeah. And he has to face that.
It so reminds me of that Peter Druck.
Thank you. The doll. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. But by staying true to the recognition that the wrong kind of adaptation, whether it's to events or to theology or to neighbors or to collective values, by staying true to the recognition that we are always in danger of becoming marionettes, he can achieve new life. And by facing that, that is death, he can achieve new life. And then that becomes his soul who speaks to him throughout the rest of the book. So you see, again, we have an image of integration. Sun, plus and minus, evil, good and bad, destructive and necessary, and now an image of the soul. And that's the basic structure of this book. Back and forth, resolution, back and forth, resolution. And then 290, the first... also in 291. The first column, that he says, man must recognize his complicity in the act of evil. You need it, and yet you've got to be careful you don't fall into it. So, you know, in problems of depression or negative, very negative self-esteem, negative voices attacking us, what the person can't do is hate the person who hated them, and therefore put distance. And I think that's what he's working around. And when you can do that without falling into the negativity, then you're free.
Are you talking about an outer person?
Well, I think you could say an outer person, but ultimately how that outer person has affected you,
right,
and to stand against those voices.
Okay, so you're back to hating the hater.
Yeah. This is we're back to that evil thing again, okay, where it's necessary, but it's dangerous. Both. Yeah.
But you don't hate the hater, him or herself. You hate that animus that took over.
You can do that, that is a real accomplishment.
I mean, otherwise you keep on hating the person per se.
Yeah. If you can do it.
Or you want to go to war with them.
Yeah.
And that's no good.
You know, I think that and this is sort of a practical issue, in the first phase of this work, you just have to stay away from those people. In future, and some people are just happy. Hey, I'm not feeling depressed anymore. I don't come home and beat myself up every night. Hell with my parents, you know. I don't care if I see them again or not. Well, that's fine, and their symptoms are gone, and they leave. Other folks will say, well, this is not an adequate final condition. I want to distinguish between them and my inner voice. Yeah.
But otherwise, you remain bitter and resentful.
Yeah, or you have to have a scapegoat. Yeah. But I mean, I'm telling you, when you've seen people whose lives have been ruined by these negative voices, I'm happy just to see. You're not going to commit suicide. Okay, so you hate somebody. Well, it's better than being dead.
So again, you could say what's poisonous at one level is helpful.
Yeah, and then what the attitude which becomes helpful, which is being able to be poisonous to the poison.
If you're poisonous to everyone, then it becomes very unhelpful.
Then it becomes unhelpful.
I think the danger is, you know, if you were abused as a child or someone has done you wrong or betrayed you, if you continue to be stuck in that emotion, they still have you. It's like being a father's daughter,
yeah,
or a mother's son. You're still stuck in that complex. They still have a part of your soul. And so maybe that's a stage to move through. But for myself, you hope to unhook that so that they no longer have you. It kind of reminds me of that film The Reader. Do you remember that movie? The Reader, where she held a piece of his soul and he had to get it back. And until he did that, he couldn't fully live. And have you seen that movie, Carl? It's really quite beautiful. The book is really wonderful.
The Freudians have a good word for this, I think. They call it identification with the aggressor. And that's what he's overcoming.
Identification.
That you take on the attitude of the person who was sadistic to you. You take that attitude on toward yourself.
And that wouldn't be healthy.
No.
Because you wouldn't use it to hate your aggressor and separate from him. That would be healthy.
You have to pass it on. Or you just hate yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, in a sort of sarcastic way, Fritz Perls would say, do unto others what you were doing unto yourself. That is still not a completely resolved condition, but it's a step sometimes. And it's astounding how difficult that is sometimes for some folks. I mean, I'm talking to some people now who, I mean, it's like if they could just stop beating themselves up to the point of highly gifted people who can barely function. But, like you say, Kathy, the ultimate is to see that voice is inside and then reestablish a relationship, but a different relationship.
There's almost something about that it's, there's some kind of benefit from.
Yeah.
At least you're beating yourself up well.
Mm-hmm. You can do one thing right.
I can do one thing right.
Yes. Well, this is Job, by the way. We're going to see this in spades in Job, because Job will be a story of, you know, a God beating up a guy. And then how do we understand that? Absolutely. This would be the source of the book of Job, I think, this material here. Well, let's see. Then the next thing he begins talking about is symbols. 291. That's and there's so much here. Then these next couple of sentences would would have to do with him realizing dreams are the way to solve these problems. There are not many truths, there are only a few. The meaning is too deep to grasp other than in symbols. That's 291 first column. Another comment there. How do you get there? How would you be worthy of enjoying the wine and bread if you have not touched the black bottom of human nature? Oh, back to the sun, however. The primordial force, this is 291, the second column, the primordial force is the radiance of the sun. Still solar.
It's contradictory. He has just said,
yeah,
you cannot enjoy the communion, the wine and the bread, or the transformation, until you've touched the dark bottom.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then we jump right to the sun.
Yeah. And now, again, this is the way it works. We've had some integration on that, and the problem is back. And
it will, but there's an inner sun.
Well,
encounters in the very beginning.
Yeah. By the end of the book, though, what he's going to say is the sun and the worm.
Mm-hmm.
And he sees them together.
Yes, and that sun was surrounded by worms.
Mm-hmm. Right. The light and the dark.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Then I think another image of resolution comes when he says, and as far as I can tell, this is the first time he uses the word self. 291, the second column. But the way is my own self, my own life founded on myself. 291, the second column.
Oh, thank you. I've got it.
Well, could you read that again?
But the way is my own self, my own life founded on myself. So we saw that self in Izdebar. We saw that in the soul, and now he's naming it directly. And what is going on now, I think, is these opposites are enlarging his grasp of the self. The first opposites, when giving birth to Isdabar, created the awareness of the self. And now what is we're seeing is that that understanding of the self is continuing to enlarge through confrontation with opposites. And then we have some pictures. You see more births. A center is emerging. Interesting little detail, the fish up there. We'll be getting Christianity before too long. How does that all fit in here? See, the center between two points, between two opposites. Again, a very lively and radiating center between two opposites, with a little bit of emphasis on the sun.
Well, there's also the sun in the dark down below there.
Yes.
So it's what's being born between the dark sun and the...
Yeah, but notice the lower sun's not quite as
right.
big.
Brilliant.
But it's going to get bigger.
This whole series of images reminds me of the way one dialogues with the unconscious. You go down, you come up. You go down, you come up.
Yeah.
Something diminishes, something
yeah.
grows.
And I think that's what he's discovering.
Mm-hmm.
By looking back over what he'd just been through, he establishes, I would say, one of the fundamental tenets of our work is you face your opposites, you collapse, you stay with it, something is born, you come up again.
Yeah, it's like a visual expression of his dialogue
mm-hmm.
that he's having
mm-hmm.
and has had up mm-hmm. until this point.
Yeah. And now this is contra Freud, because Freud doesn't recognize that process. This is contra Christianity, because this center will be what he would say has been projected onto God for the last 2,000 years. And he's finding it in himself. We'll see pretty soon. He realizes it's not only in himself, but these are the steps of his thinking.
Well, and he takes the Hindu attitude that it is in him because it's in himself doesn't mean that it isn't everywhere.
Yeah. I don't think he has that attitude yet, but he's coming to it.
He's used the Hindu images in that respect.
Well,
but
yes.
But he doesn't make it through yet.
Right.
The image happened.
Yeah, and I think those pictures are always a step ahead.
He was familiar with the Hindu texts at this point.
Yeah.
And they make it pretty plain.
Yeah. But I don't hear him... You hear it alluded to, but it doesn't become a focus.
I suppose he hasn't put it in Western terms yet.
Yeah.